Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain, and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Now get two sausage McMuffin with egg sandwiches for just $5. That's right, $5. And with many locations opening at 5 a.m. or earlier, your morning starts when you do. Order ahead on the app, skip the wait, and grab your breakfast on your schedule. It's mornings made better at McDonald's. Price and participation may vary. Must opt into rewards.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune is with us once again for Parenting Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
My daughter is 12 and quite an anxious child. She's very clever and is creative, and I would love to see her develop those skills. However, we live in an area that is quite GAA-centric. She plays Gaelic and horse rides. I think she plays Gaelic because her friends do. She can become upset and stressed before a match, and I think she has other talents that come much easier to her. However, I don't want to tell her that she can't take part in Gaelic. What's the best way to proceed?
I would say kind of proceed as you are, with a couple of little variations, because, you know, if you are in an area that's, as you say, quite GAA centric and she plays because her friends do, there's a big part of me, Sean, going, what harm? That's as good a reason to play as any other for me. You know, she can take part without being especially talented or especially passionate about the sport, because if she's doing it so that she spends more time with friends, that's great, because that's about connection and collaboration. And if she's doing it to be part of what is a GAA-centric community, there's no harm in her doing that. Now, the only caveat to that is this parent perceiving she's upset and stressed, but it's particular to matches. And there'd be kids who, just with anxious anticipation before a match, even if they loved the sport, could experience some of that stress. So it might be worth just really chatting to her in terms of what part of GAA do you really enjoy most, and validating whatever she says. If it's hanging out with my friends, having fun with my friends, go, that's great. So don't be worried about the matches. Focus on the bit that you really enjoy. And really, of course, keep celebrating effort, and it doesn't matter about outcome and all of that. I know as parents we can say that, but at 12, they know it does kind of matter. The other thing, though, is she also horse rides, and it's sounding like, well, if it's, that doesn't sound like that's for the community or for friends. So she is doing something that is just for her. And because she is also described as creative, if there is another activity that as a parent you think she would really enjoy, that would just, you know, spark fun for her, consider doing that, but don't overload her. And the reason I'm saying that is if she's playing GAA at the age of 12, chances are that's two or three evenings a week and then a match at the weekend. So, you know, while it's one activity, it could take up quite a lot of the week. And not what you don't want is a child who's now got loads of things going on and she's no time for herself. So I would tend to leave this. If she's happy to do it to be with her friends, good enough reason for me. But just downplay the matches and emphasize that, look, if having fun with your friends is the reason you do this, let that be the reason you do this.
Yeah.
Don't be worried about the matches.
Yeah, absolutely. Isn't it great? She's being out and being active. Sport in any form is great, says Joe. I grew up with an unhappy and critical mother, and I felt I needed to manage her moods. In my 40s now, and after some therapy, I now have good boundaries with her, though I still feel guilty she's elderly. The problem now is my management of my 8-year-old son. He has a mild learning disability and autism and was sick when he was younger. As a consequence, I feel completely responsible for him. My emotions are dictated by his emotions, and I cannot be calm unless he's happy. I feel so sorry for him, and because he has very little in the way of friends, I play for hours with him as I feel that if I don't, who will? On the flip side, I can also feel very trapped by him. I am the one he emotionally regulates with. I am his person. So I just feel I have to be there for him constantly. I just feel his disability clouds my judgment on how to detach and still give him the support he needs. I know I'm not giving him independence, but I just don't know how. I have a daughter, age 10, who's very good with him, and a husband who is great with him and very supportive of me. But I just can't seem to break this cycle with him. I don't currently work. I've tried to go back, but ended up feeling like he struggled.
Oh, Sean, my goodness.
Cranky, there's a lot there.
And just at the end, you ended up feeling like he struggled. There's a part of me saying, did he? You know, did he struggle, or is it that guilt this person is mentioning, you know, this guilt about your mother being elderly now? Is this that you're hardwired when you pull away and begin to do something for yourself? We can see dynamics like this creep in when you've got. Children now, because children aren't, they don't owe us anything back, at least not when they're small. Okay. But in healthy adult relationships, what you've got is high levels of reciprocity, you know, give and take. So we support each other. One person's needs are met by the other. But if you've grown up with this kind of enmeshed or very codependent relationship that's described at the beginning with this unhappy critical mother, it can push a child quite early into compulsive caregiving as a role. So I understand my role in relationship, especially care-based relationships, as I give the care.
Yeah,
I am the one to meet the need. It's not about my needs. There's something that is coming up. And it might be, and this is my inference based on a short letter, okay? But it might be that as a parent, you perceive your son's lack of friends and his apparent loneliness, as you see it, that it's triggering how your mother conditioned you to respond to her unhappiness.
Yeah.
So as soon as you see, oh, he's lonely, he has no friends, he mustn't be happy, there's something hardwired into you that you are now responsible for his happiness, just as you were for your mother's happiness. And you know what it's like to grow up with an unhappy mother. And you, your family, your children, your partner, all deserve you to take care of yourself. I would strongly suggest that this person re-engages with their therapist. I know, like some of the words in this letter, I had some therapy. I don't know what that means.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And that while you felt you needed to manage your mother's moods, you then refer to your management of your 8-year-old son. There's something here where you're taking on responsibility for his holistic well-being and happiness. You cannot do that. It's also not in his interests that that's done for him. Because he's 8 years old, yes, he has some challenges. There's no question. They're detailed here. But we do have to let our children, even our children who do have additional challenges, wobble a little bit to find their footing. You know, I don't mean off you go, good luck. But at the same time, you know, you're saying that he has very little in the way of friends. That doesn't mean nothing or doesn't mean no one. I'm wondering, is there one child you could do a short, very structured play date, play experience with? And yes, you're there, but not now like a helicopter hovering over them. Mm. Let them play. And when you feel it's running its course, call it to an end. But little experiences like that. Is there an activity in the community? We were just talking about activities in the communities in the previous letter that your son could be involved in, even if it's very structured and he's not authentically friends with the other kids there, he's having a connected experience for the 1 hour, the 90 minutes of the activity. I also think you mentioned here about how your daughter, who's only 10, is good with him and your husband is great with him. Let them in.
Yeah.
Let them
absolutely.
In.
Yeah.
And let them share this with you, because there's something about I am his person, but also he's your person. Mm. It just may not be in either of your interests that you have this very tight codependent piece. Who is there for you? You name your husband is very supportive. You name this kind of somewhat, I should get back to work and have a life for myself, but I feel that guilt. I really think there would be huge benefit to going back to therapy. I think there are very loud echoes of this person's past in their present.
Yeah, I think in the letter it's almost like she knows it herself.
I think so too. Yeah. And there is evidence of being in therapy here.
Yeah,
you know? You know, that awareness. But Sean, you know, like there is no better way to discover your unresolved issues than to become a parent. Becoming a parent brings issues we didn't even know we were carrying, screaming to the surface.
Yeah.
So the ones you are aware, and there's a lot of insight here, and growing up with an unhappy critical mother who creates this codependent and compulsive caregiving relationship, that's very difficult to really extrapolate yourself from. It really is. So you have to almost call yourself out and go, you're doing it again. I see you doing it again. I've got to stop this. I think go back to therapy. I think it's an investment, not only in your own happiness and well-being, but that of your family. I think it's worth doing.
Myself, my wife and our 22-month-old daughter are expecting our second child in July. Our daughter is absolutely amazing. We love her to bits. I was just wondering, had you any tips for helping her with the new arrival? And if there are any good books on the topic? That's a wonderfully succinct question. We rarely get them.
By the way,
if you'd like to send your very short question, afternoon@newstalk.com is the address. So, yeah, this kind of territory we have covered before.
It is, absolutely. But you know what? There are some really kind of basic generic things, and then there's going to be the big wait and see. Mm. You have to wait and see. 22 months old now, baby's due ballpark 2 months from now. So you're going to have a 2-year-old on your hands. Yeah. So she's also going to developmentally shift at that stage, as she is supposed to be. I think I'm sure you are talking about a new baby coming, but really start to ramp that up in a very real way about 6 weeks out. Mm. Baby's coming. Let your 2-year-old or almost 2-year-old see you getting very ready for baby coming, things being built, put together, all of those bits, packing the bag, talking about, you know, mommy's going to go and have our baby, and who is your 2-year-old going to be with? Who's going to come? That little bit of conversation about who will I wake up with when you're gone, and just making a plan about that whole piece as well. I would always suggest, especially with this age group, get a doll and let her start mirroring and role play with her. You could start it now, taking care of the baby doll, changing the baby doll's nappy, feeding the baby, wrapping in the blanket, going for little walks in a little buggy, doing all the bits that she's going to see happen with this newborn. But if you can do this in advance, then keep doing it when the baby's coming. There's a familiarity and a bit of routine built in where she's associating taking care of baby and what's involved in that. When baby comes, I think give toddlers a job, not a very responsible job, let's be honest now.
Drive down to the shops there.
I mean holding the wipes.
Yeah.
You know, that is the very responsible job, or that they're in charge of holding something as part of the changing, or you hold the baby's foot while we're doing feeding, whatever it might be, that they have a little role. The baby, of course, can bring the toddler a gift. I think it should not be something massive. This is a baby, bear in mind. They have limited means. So it should be a modest, tokenistic little gift, perhaps a soft toy, something like that.
Yeah.
And just ensure that you have someone in your support network, be that friend or family, who can step in or step up to give your little one a bit of extra one-to-one time in those immediate 6 to 8 weeks when it really is all about the new baby and taking care of mom as well. There are many books. Rachel Fuller has quite a few. She has Waiting for Baby, My New Baby. I think there's loads of little baby books in Rachel Fuller's piece. Giles Andre has There's a House Inside My Mummy. That's a long standing book. And there's a series of books called The Campbell Books. They cover lots of topics. And there's one called We're Having a Baby. Do not by any means go out and buy all of those books I've listed. Have a little look online, see which one is, or go to your library, start borrowing a few of those and integrate those into your 2-year-old's bedtime routine. And then just wait and see, because she might surprise you and be like, great, cool as a cucumber. Or she might go, no, this is not what you described at all.
Yeah.
So you're going to end up doing some of this proactively and a lot of it reactively.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no guarantee she might.
There really isn't.
And she won't even know what she's acting out against.
No, it's very abstract. I mean, this kind of, there is a baby, but there isn't yet.
Yeah.
It's only when the baby's actually there that it would become real for her.
Yeah. You mean forever?
And that's the piece. That's often the piece that wasn't discussed.
My 16-year-old is very mature for his age, and he hangs around with kids that are generally 17 or 18. He's good-natured, and we've almost never had any trouble from him at all. He's had a smartphone since first year. Naturally, we have parental controls on the phone, but recently he's been pestering us to disable them because he's too old for them now. He says none of his friends have them anymore. Obviously, a lot of us will remember having seen over 18 films before we were of age, and perhaps it wasn't that big of an issue, but I feel it's much more important to hold firm on that line for this generation. I'm a bit of a Luddite when it comes to smartphones, though perhaps I'm overreacting. Should I hold fast with the parental controls until he's 18, or is there a halfway house I can implement that now that he's becoming a young adult?
I mean, this is an interesting one, Sean, because I'm sure there are lots of 16-year-olds who no longer have parental controls on their phone. And I really respect this kid who has not tried to circumvent that we know those controls and is challenging you over them, as is his right, but has been accepting of them so far. And, you know, I don't think there is a should here. Okay, I don't have a 16, absolutely take them up. Because every 16-year-old is different. There are some of them who could really do with parental controls on their phones, and there are some who don't. So, like, you're talking about this, your son is showing you that he is responsible, that he is mature, and now it's time for you to show that you believe him. You know, there is a little bit of kind of giving back to him on this. And I'm thinking about a compromise, because you're saying he hangs around with kids that are generally 17 or 18. You could say, no, I hear you. And I had always been thinking we'd keep these on your phone till you're 18, but I'm prepared to take them off when you're 17.
Yeah.
Which is in line with the age of the kids he's referring to.
Mm.
It is a compromise, but you're still holding your boundary and setting a limit. Now, in lots of ways, that might seem arbitrary, you know, like what, look, 16, 17. But it is about you feeling comfortable as a parent, you know, and as a parent, you know him best. And I'm just noting this line. I feel it's much more important to hold firm on this line. If this is one of those red line issues for you, then trust yourself, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think as well, though, Sean, I'd ask him what he imagines the difference will be when there are no controls on his phone. Like you say, okay, imagine I take them off right now. What's the difference? You know, how will you use your phone differently? And or how do you imagine you might use it differently? And he might be, I won't. I just want you to trust me. Which is what I think he is coming at with, his usage, he has shown you how he uses the device and it won't change. But he just wants you to step back. It is very normal for a 16-year-old to want their parents to step back and give more space, more freedom, more space in their life in general. I think the context you're presenting to him is that you're only doing this to keep him safe, that you're not spying. You could also say, just so you know, I have those controls on your phone. The days of me checking them regularly are gone. I don't check in on your phone unless I have something to worry about, and I would talk to you about that. But I feel more comfortable that we hold the line till you're 17 on this.
Yeah.
It really does depend, though, child to child. And I believe him when he says, you know, I don't know none of my friends, but if they're 17, 18, I believe him. I think there are other 16-year-olds who probably still have controls on their phone.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't buy into this, nobody else, it's only me. Like, that's a universal argument.
Says every child ever,
So I think, you know, but own it and say, it's not you that I don't trust. It's just, I'm quite nervous of this technology. I own the fact that I don't know a lot about it. I probably need to get a little bit more informed, but I will feel more comfortable knowing I've done the right job keeping you safe if I leave these on till you're 17.
Our 12-year-old daughter is very competitive. To be fair, we have encouraged this with our participation in various games and other activities over the years. However, we have noticed over the past year or so that she tends to compare herself to her peers a lot. She gets very anxious if her cousins or school friends achieve something or win a tournament, come in first in the debating competition or other such things. She immediately holds other people's achievements up to her own to see how they measure. She sees her peers' achievements almost as an indictment of her own apparent failures, even though she's achieved a lot. How do we get her to care less about what other people are doing and focus on herself?
I mean, it depends on what you mean by focus on herself. Like, if you mean to be less invested in other people's achievements but solely invested in her own achievements, I'm not sure which is better, you know, if I'm being honest. There is a little bit of, to be fair, we've encouraged this because she participated in activities. Participating in activities doesn't breed this.
No, it
doesn't.
Just
to be clear. No. So I'm just gently being curious with you as parents. When you say you've encouraged it, were you also invested in the outcome? And might it be fair to say you're a competitive family or, you know, there's something. And it's okay to admit that you are a competitive person. But, you know, it might be about owning that and saying the joy is in the participation. At least it's supposed to be. Okay. But for some people, and, you know, this comes up when you think about your own play personality and play tendencies. Like, if you are of the competitive play personality and you know who you are, at least there's people in your life who'll tell you you are. It may not be that you play the sport. It might be that you're a super fan and you have all the jerseys and the face paints and you're really invested and you know all the stats. But for you, the playfulness is the winning. Like, there's no, I can sit here and say it's the taking part, effort over outcome. And I will say all of that. But if that's not your true play personality, you're like, yeah, 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 but it's actually the winning. It is the outcome. Mm. So own that if it's you, because maybe there's something of this coming out in this child as well. Because it's not just about participating, it's about winning. And it's not just about winning, it's that others don't win and I do. Mm. It's a very particular form of competitive.
It's Gore Vidal. It's not enough to succeed, others must fail.
Exactly. There's that little bit of comparative culture coming in there. So it's not just competition and competitiveness, because that's not necessarily a bad thing. You can make that work for you. So I would try and tap in instead of kind of focus on yourself. I'd be like, tap in what sparks joy for her. When do you really see her light up and laugh and smile and enjoy what she's doing? It may well be the winning, but is there somewhere else? Be interested in her, you know, as a person, what makes her tick, what makes her laugh, and really reinforce that and feed it back to her. I notice that. I love being with you when we're, it could be just watching a movie or we're having a hot chocolate, we're going for a walk. I love these moments because you really relax and you smile and you light up, and I notice that about you. She might notice it about herself, and it might be real benefit for her to hear that fed back to her. And let her hear and see you express joy in others' achievements. I'm so happy for so-and-so. Oh, my friend got this job. They were going, I'm really happy for them.
If you can muster the insincerity to do it.
But, think that's a little piece that... She is being hard on herself. It may not be that she resents others' success. It's more that she feels, I should be doing that. I can only be happy if I'm winning. And you're trying to remind her there are lots of these micro moments of joy in her life that are going overlooked, because these big moments are what are taking up her focus. If you want to shift her focus to herself, do it in these micro moments of joy way.
Yeah. Joanna, thanks a million. Thank you. As ever, Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.